We're on the road to take over Brooklyn 3, and we've got a returning Johnny Gargano. We got a preview of next week's show. We got so many people coming in. They're fresh, they're new, they're returning, all of that, and we got a special guest today, so stay with us.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the NXT After Show right here on AfterBuzz TV. You gotta be prepared, just in general, in life. Here's some metal. I'm one of your hosts here, and it's Mark Budonica. You can find me on Twitter at Mark Budonica. I'm unfortunately sitting next to the smelly one among us, the one in True Hobo, and I've got some sort of film on my
own. My scent is hard work distilled. It is broken down into something that can be sold for profit.
Some sort of
at nxteam.spreadshirt.com.
All right, you brought
it around. At Trouble,
brought it around. Bill Hancock.
This song rules. What is this?
This is a metal cover of Be Prepared. This guy, Jonathan Young, he does covers of like Disney songs, TV show openings. It's really, he's got a lot of cool stuff.
Radical.
Yeah.
Find me on social media, send out a tell. But this guy.
Our special guest, he is the current United Wrestling Network television champion, a countless other championships and other promotions, a performer in NJPW, that's New Japan, for those of you who don't know, the star of a most entrancing fanfic, the man who will make you cry, it's Rocky Romero.
Yay. Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, it's been fun, yeah. We just watched some really good wrestling.
It's like, sometimes NXT can be a little bit more like, let's just progress storylines for a second, but tonight there was some pretty damn good wrestling.
Yeah, it was an episode with two hands, because you did progress some storylines, mm-hmm. You saw some familiar faces, and then we had a couple of debuts and some really killer wrestling that you could really sink your teeth into, so hey,
it was
I'll
an
take
episode
it.
With two hands and two arms.
Yeah, two arms.
It had two hands and a fighting chance.
Yeah, right.
The first match of the night was Johnny Gargano versus Raul Mendoza, who we haven't seen since the CWC. What do y'all think of this match? This was pretty damn awesome.
Mendoza really stood out in this match.
Yeah, he looks like he's been working on his craft a bit. You know, he looked like he cleaned up his some of his movements and stuff like that, and got rid of some of the bad habits that I think that he had during the CWC. He looked really good.
Mm-hmm. I like his sort of his luchador style when it comes into the movement aspect of it. He's able to kind of move in and move out, and with Gargano, Gargano's also sort of a guy who is really fluid in there. So if you're going to be fluid at any given time, it better be against Gargano. And I think Mendoza reminded me why I liked him so much. He's hard hitting but quick, and he's small, which means if you're small, you usually got to be fast and know what you're doing in there, or else you're just gonna flounder. But I think this was a great matchup.
I'm surprised that it went as short as it did, or it felt like the ending seemed to have come without any sort of a warning. It was just, oh, all of a sudden, submission, and it's over. As opposed, like, it felt like they were building.
Well, eventually there was a submission.
Sure, yes. Mm. But I mean, in terms of, it felt like it was, the pace was, it not necessarily all over the place, but it was just a quick ramp up, like maybe 0 to 30 and then 30 to 60. But yeah, it was an interesting pace, but one that worked for these guys.
I think it worked.
Yeah.
You know, I think it worked. Like, I felt there was just enough time for those two to kind of show, to feel each other out. And that's basically what it was, because we haven't seen Raul in some time now. So I thought it was just the perfect amount of time. And then Gargano, you know, is back on it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see what happens with Gargano's.
Shout out to the other guests in our studio tonight, Fly. So if you see us.
Yeah.
Swatting.
Not, if you see us not knowing what to do with our arms,
my fault. My fault.
But I really like Mendoza's. I really like Mendoza's look, because he's got like a really unique look for, especially for WWE, because he looks like he's 5 feet tall and weighs 600 pounds, but not in a bad way.
Right.
Like, it looks like he swallowed a couple of bowling balls.
You see the Otis Dozovic of luchadors, right.
And then he moves with quickness.
Yeah,
he doesn't look fat in any way.
No.
He's just like.
Can dance.
Yeah, he's like a rectangle.
He's got a luchador body. He's classic luchador body.
Classic. I should say classico.
El clásico.
Raul Mendoza, el clásico.
But yeah, I think this match did great for both guys. We're excited where Johnny Gargano is going to go, and whatever's next for Raul Mendoza, I think we'll be in the first row. Excited to see it. That's it's
breaking news.
It's a turn of phrase.
Is that a turn of phrase?
It is now.
It will be in the front row of life.
Yeah. And Gargano's best spear in a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. Look good.
And Gargano's still doing the DIY fake out entrance.
Well, he had a mic. Like, it was like, wait a minute, this is a mic. And then they played the real one, and he dropped it. Like, before he even had a chance to say anything, which was a little weird.
Okay. He should have been like, cut my music. I want all you fat, lazy, disgusting slobs to see.
I feel like
real
I've
means.
Seen that somewhere.
He was looking pretty good tonight.
It's true.
He was looking pretty
real jacked, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that spear is usually as telegraphed as a Randy Orton hanging DDT off the ropes. But
dang, dude.
What? So, yeah, that's not telegraphed every... So, it's vintage Orton!
Like, dang, dude.
What, is he going to come in and do it to me?
Yes.
He might.
All right, I'm going to die.
He is not afraid
His trademark is literally coming out of nowhere. Why would you Timmy Fain like that?
I messed up, guys. Maybe. I'm so sorry.
He could be right up there right now. There's a...
No!
Now, from now on, our runner has to be like, every now and then we'll play like the, I am always here.
He's here!
He's here! Keep your head on a swivel, it's Randy Orton!
Now, maybe we could talk about that later in the show. So then we got a look back at the tussle between Sanity and Authors of Pain, and it was confirmed that we're going to be getting a tag team title match between Sanity and the Authors of Pain at Brooklyn 3, and we got a little bit from Paul Ellering. They showed their sanity when they attacked the Authors of Pain, take over Brooklyn. We will write the chapter, but between now and then, be prepared, monsters are real. I love that monsters are real thing, because those guys are crazy.
Yeah. Paul Ellering, that was a creepy promo. Somebody has to turn on the lights.
Yeah, you can barely see it. It's like, wait, are they there? Is that
just
them?
A shine off his bald head is all I really caught on the monitor.
Does Paul spend time at the Performance Center, or does he just like come in for taping?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, there was
an elusive figure.
Yeah. Not the last tour, but the tour before, Paul was on tour with the Authors. Huh. So
that's true.
It, like, even for live shows,
imparting his wisdom. Yeah. Doing puppet shows.
Might as well. You gotta stay active somehow. Why not? I know everybody's tired, but check this out. I don't know. I don't know why I went for marionette instead of...
Lonely goat herd over here.
Are we stoked for this tag title match?
Yeah, of course.
Cool. End of subject.
We've talked a lot about how instantly better that tag team got when it, one, became that tag team, and two, the second Alexander Wolf started talking on TV. Like, just this dynamic.
But what are their actual chances of beating the Authors of Pain? I really don't see Sanity taking the titles off of the Authors of Pain. I kind of don't.
I feel like it... So, Heavy Machinery was a match for Authors of Pain just in sheer size and strength. But Sanity not only has at least half of the size and at least half of the strength, but they also have sheer unpredictability that maybe a lot of other tag teams that the Authors have faced don't.
The Authors have faced. It's fine. I got you. No, it's usually me, so I feel good about it. I agree in the sense that Alexander Wolf presents a complete unpredictability where he can be anywhere. If he's not in the ring, he and Orton are hanging out in the ceiling. But you know, he could hide under the ring and pull one of the Authors down. Or Nikki Cross could get involved somehow. Or Eric Young could get involved somehow. We don't know what's going to happen. But as long as they have some sort of strength, which they do have in Killian Dane, it could be anything.
That's true. The Authors also haven't ever had to play the damned numbers game.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
The damn numbers game.
But I'd say the unpredictability factor plays more in a case of a champion's advantage. If they were actually holding the title, it'd be easier for them to hold the title because of the unpredictability factor. I don't think necessarily that plays into it, because if there's a disqualification, the Authors still hold onto the title. That's where I'm kind of like, if they pull any shenanigans, a disqualification means the Authors still hang on to it.
But that means they can have somebody distract the referee while the other one does the dirty work.
Maybe.
They've got enough people for that.
Yeah.
That's going to be good. After this, we get Asuka talking about how it would take over Brooklyn. She's going to beat Ember Moon. She's been here before. She's going to do it again. But Ember Moon comes out, and we got a little bit of a tussle. We got a big ol' slap from Asuka when after offering... You right?
Shook her, man. Yeah. Shook Ember Moon way down to her boots.
Y'all got shook, too.
Woke her up, man.
But Ember popped her there. Right back. It's a big ol' tussle. Asuka dumps Ember outside. Ember hits the eclipse and... roughly messes up Asuka quite a bit. Motions that she's going to pick up the title and pose with it, but she goes, no, I'm going to pick that up when I earn it. Now, what do we think about this match for Brooklyn?
I feel like Ember, this is the one that might dethrone Asuka. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that, I don't know, there's just something about her presence, and, you know, obviously, I think that it's going to be a hell of a match. It's probably going to be Asuka's best match. I'm really putting a lot of stock into this one, and but I do think that maybe it's Asuka's time
to lose. Yeah,
maybe move somewhere else.
We saw on maybe. The maybe.
Maybe. If she loses, then I mean definitely right.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, but also one of the biggest and best and longest title reigns in WWE history.
Yeah,
I mean where else do you go?
Right.
So just call it. Right. That's it. I'm done.
Right.
I'm going.
Well, how are we all currently feeling about the possibility of her retaining, going up, vacating the title, and then the finals of the Mae Young Classic being for that vacant title?
I've been about that ever since she's been holding.
Like, do we think it's like 50-50 that might happen, or that Ember might
that's
win?
That's really interesting.
I'd give it a 50-50. It's hard to say. Like, I'm behind Ember Moon. She said today on
NXT Insider
that she has been doubling her training, but I don't think that's necessarily the answer to beating Asuka, because she faced Asuka before and lost dirty, and that was what Asuka did in order to hold onto that belt. She fought dirty for like maybe the first and only time in the entirety of her championship reign. So that's actually what you need to work on. You've got to watch out for what Asuka hasn't done. Not just what she has done, but the unknown factor. So I don't know how one prepares for the unknown. And I think that's going to be the question that Ember has to ask herself. How do I prepare in case Asuka decides to go completely off script and cheat completely? She looked a lot like Ric Flair tonight, Asuka did. Mm-hmm. So is she going to pull out a Ric Flair playbook and start playing super dirty? That's the question.
Give an arm bar to her coat?
Yeah. Yeah, I would have liked to see that.
That would great. Ends up in her tights just fighting every single bit.
How you prepare for the unpredictable is actually you pay a friend to at really like random times just like show up and throw like sand in your eyes or like fish
pocket sand. I've done that. I've done that for money. Yeah. Did that game. I've done a lot of things for money. I'm not proud of.
I hear that way too
often from you. We'll get to doing anything later in the episode.
I feel like I wonder if like Asuka's kind of bored as champion. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. In a way
completely.
Like you know, yeah. I mean she's ran through everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Basically. And then at this point, it's like, what else can I do? You know, like, but, you know, obviously she doesn't want to lose the championship, I guess, you know, because, but, I mean,
she's going for Bruno. She's going for Bruno's record.
She's been so dominant that, like, it's actually a possibility that she might show up, like, do her entrance, and then, like, make a winking hand gesture and just throw the belt at Ember Moon and be like, I don't get it.
Right.
But then she would lose by disqualification because she hit her in the face with a belt.
Yeah.
I'm excited either way for what is in Asuka's future, but I don't know what it could be. Right, you know, like where could she end up? What TV show needs her more?
Right.
Ooh, that's a good question.
With Bailey just getting hurt,
probably Raw, man. Yeah. Bailey, because
Raw has more women than SmackDown, but they use fewer women than SmackDown.
You would think with
SmackDown, like the Native American uses 100% of their women's division,
right? Even the eyeballs and the feet, yeah.
Feet would be Lana, eyeballs would be Tamina.
Okay, sure.
All right, dig it. All right, let's transition. Let's transition to this.
I'm just kidding. We've been canceled again.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank, for joining us on our last episode. So we got Bobby Roode in the back in sort of a makeshift interview where they're still trying to like set the camera and everything. It seemed to me like Bobby's got a little bit. He doesn't have too much time. He's a champion. He's, you know what? I got places to be, hands to kiss, babies to shake, and
time is Bobby.
Time is Bobby. So he talks about how he makes a lottery reference to Roderick Strong because people in trailer parks like playing the lottery.
He ain't wrong.
No, he's certainly not.
But they tend to play scratchers and not the ones.
I'm offended because I play the lottery.
See, but it's for everybody.
But do you do the quick pick or do you like actually have your numbers that you play?
To be honest, I do. I do one quick pick and then I have my numbers.
Yeah.
My dad, twice a week for like 10 years had. Give a 20,
right?
10 quick picks and 10.
Oh, he had a set number.
He had 10 sets of numbers.
He had the little like plastic California Lotto sleeve that you keep your card in. So you could,
he was a serious player.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're unemployed for 20 years.
I guess so.
Well, all right. So they move on from Roderick Strong, and they talk. And next week, he invites Drew McIntyre to get in the ring and have a little conversation. Not a contract signing, just want to get coffee and talk.
A convo.
Just quick.
Open a dialogue.
Shoot the biz.
Powwow. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, sell him a toaster.
Like, what have you been up to? You want to, you know, just catch up?
Yeah,
you haven't seen each other in a minute.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you still got that worthless family?
but Bobby's like, all right, I'm done. Starts to leave. Roderick Strong.
Hey, man.
Hey, hold me back. Let me go. I want to beat him up, man. Like, you get it back. Like, Bobby was real convincing. Just like, you get him out of here. Get him out of here. He's a maniac. But
I think the verbatim quote was, it's BS. I did not hit her. I did not.
Oh, hi, Bobby.
Oh, hi, Regal.
Oh, hi, Bill. Bill, that would be even better if he called him Bill Regal.
I thought that William, before Rod left, I thought that William Regal called him Rodney. He's like, there's nothing I can do, Rodney.
All right, now listen. Roderick Strong, his heart's in the right place. He's showing all of the right passion. But sometimes you just don't know what to say. Or how to say it.
To quote William H. Macy in Magnolia, he does have a lot of love to give. He just doesn't know where to put it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay.
But ultimately, he ends up getting held back. He's like, what am I supposed to do? I'm a man. How am I supposed to react?
That's just as funny the second time.
He's got this terrible Sid Vicious disorder where nothing ever sounds right when he says it. Like, the wrong emphasis is permanently on the wrong syllable.
Correct. But he's like, I'll do anything you want. Just give me Bobby Roode. Hey, I don't think you want to play that card. That's a dangerous card to play. All right, you get to work the Authors of Pain. After they get done with catering, you got to clean up. But hands are tied. I can't do anything, man. It's Bobby Roode, Drew McIntyre at Brooklyn. So what's...
I would hate to clean up after the Authors of Pain at catering.
Yeah.
Imagine the mess.
No
hands. Yeah. Why would they use their hands? Why?
Thank you for going back to my
How
really
many weeks
bad
till
joke.
Takeover?
Three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I feel like something's going to happen here. Something's going to break, right?
So,
like,
some sort of number one contendership match or something, maybe, or is
maybe,
Roderick...
Do you think he's going to... I wonder if he's... Is possible that he might interject himself and they'll turn into a three-way of some sort? I mean, I don't know. It seems like something's a brewing.
Yeah. Unless they lock him in a closet, he's probably going to show up in the middle of the ring.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
What would be the best way to, like, should he earn it? I mean, like, though enough people...
That's what good guys do.
Right. All right, the end.
All right.
No, sorry.
Moving on.
I mean, they had a hell of a match, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but I heard it was a hell of a match.
It was a real good match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Roddy's family was ringside.
Right, right. And that's Roddy's strong suit, man. He's a freaking machine, you know? Like, he really is. He's not... The guy that maybe is you want to be, you know, go out there and talk about, like, hey, man, you know, whatever, my family this, my family that. But even though I know that, like you guys said, it comes from a real place, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. the guy does have a lot of love, but sure. He's one of the most hardworking wrestlers
exactly.
in the game. And, you know, and I think that they should let him do more of that.
We're proponent of Roderick Strong's performances.
Right, right.
But he needs somebody to talk for him.
Yeah. He's one of the best technical wrestlers I've ever seen, but for God's sake, take away the microphone.
No, or you know what? Or I think that like when they did that documentary series on him, they just need to let him like really just be himself, you know, and like and not try to you know. But he should have just came in there and beat up Rude.
Yeah, it's exactly. You know,
he didn't have to say anything.
Have him look like a badass. Yeah. Like, you don't have to have. Yeah.
Let him do what he does is his best. You know?
Like, there's that real disconnect between, like, when you see him in the documentary setting and you see him as a real person, like, oh, that's a real person. Then you see him in the ring, you're like, oh, he's a badass, too. But there's that in-between area where they're trying to make him do a thing that he's not great at.
Right.
And they're having that aspect try and carry the whole story.
You know what, though? Honestly, like, maybe in a year, watch. I bet you he becomes pretty good at this.
I hope so.
Because the guy works so hard, and especially when people are... say, hey, no, you know, you're not really good at that like that, then, like, he flips on a switch and he'll work really hard at it, and all of a sudden he'll be, like, the best at it, and you'll be like, whoa, I don't know.
Super into it. And theoretically, that's what NXT's for, is to give you all the missing pieces.
Right.
Like,
to give you opportunities like that, right? So, interesting.
No, we want more. No, definitely.
Yeah. No, it's...
Like, we could be tough on some people on this show, but ultimately...
It's out of love.
We want everybody to succeed. Why would we want anybody to fail?
I think that, you know, as a professional wrestler, I think that I like to hear, you know, criticism, you know, people not liking what I'm doing, you know, because it does make me work harder. It does fuel the fire, you know. I'm just like, I'm a competitive person.
But you like to hear it in a context of, like, being constructive and talking about it and not like somebody on Twitter being like, hey, you suck. Your forearms are shitty.
Right. I mean, yeah. You're right. Yeah. My forearms are great.
Yeah, they're great.
Definitely. Definitely. But, you know, that's okay. You could say that. You're just going to get blocked, you know?
That being said, everyone go on Twitter and talk about Trent's big nipples.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh. At Trenty Locks.
Yeah.
And tag me in it at Azuka Rock.
He's very hard on eggs.
Yeah. That guy loves hard on eggs. Yeah.
Took a flipping turn. So after this, we got a confirmation that we're going to be getting the Street Profits next week. Finally. Yeah.
These videos are so fun.
Yeah.
Well, did anybody see their reactions to what happened on Thursday night? What year is it? On SmackDown Tuesday? In the segment where Shane was backstage and talking to Kevin Owens, there were some red cups that were just on the ground taken down. And it was like, look at what they're doing to us, man. It's like, rip. It was so good. Red Cup Revolution, all that stuff. Man, I'm so stoked for these two. We've been hearing about them for I can't tell you how long. And to finally get them on TV, looking forward to it. But speaking of next week, well, something to talk about at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. After this, we get a quick match between Sonya Deville.
Sonya Deville.
Sorry, you hit me with the Johnny, and it's stuck in my head. Versus Jenna Van Bemmel. This was a amazing showing for Sonya.
Yeah.
Not so much for her competitor this evening, who really we don't know anything about. She didn't do anything, and she just the audience and us in studio all thought she looked like Charlotte. And we didn't get to see anything that
it's like somebody ordered a Charlotte, but they were accidentally given a large instead of a regular.
Yeah, we got a large. I want a large Charlotte.
It's whatever.
A liter of cola.
Well,
a liter of Charlotte.
This woman, Jenna Van Bemmel, is it?
Jenna Van Bemmel.
She had the same sort of thing going for her that, like, Raul Mendoza.
See, it's got everybody.
Mendoza!
He hits him with the Mendoza!
Same sort of thing where it's like, you look at... I'm a huge fan of any... And we've had this conversation before the show... I am a huge fan of any wrestler that doesn't look like another wrestler. Mm-hmm. So, like, as soon as I saw her, like, we were all kind of like, whoa!
Yeah.
Like, It's the total like Simpsons like, but the little guy hasn't done anything yet. Like, yeah. You just want to know what their deal is, and you just want to stare at them. You know, yeah. Like not in a like grotesque way.
But like we didn't get. She was already in ring. Yeah. We didn't see an entrance. It was all Sonya. She was 100% Sonya.
Dude, she was 200% Sonya. She was showing, she was showing so much personality and so much confidence.
Jenna hit an avalanche in the corner.
True.
Yeah.
That was about it.
Yeah, it was it.
Yeah. But it was, we got a rolling triangle for the win. How did this make Sonya look? Like, how? Like, does this raise her? How much does this raise her stock?
She looked great, but the finish was a little funky.
Yeah.
And
couldn't find the arm, seemingly.
She had it. I know she had it.
Yeah, it almost looked like she thought she was going to go for the armbar, so she switched her leg over, and they realized, oh, no, I want to go for the triangle, and switched it back.
Yeah, maybe she was going to go for the armbar.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. So,
but that, yeah,
maybe she realized that's Asuka's move.
Got to get that extra power.
That was the only blemish on the match, though.
Right.
And I just want to see more of Jenna too.
Yeah.
Like I love Sonya. I want to see way more of her, but I also want to see like what the deal was with her competitor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sonya made her kind of look like a goof out there. Mm-hmm. And Jenna was never able to get one up on Sonya.
Right,
you know,
right.
You always try and get one up on your opponent. If they make you look dumb, you got to be just a little smarter. At least show them you're on the same level. She never got it back.
Well, she did.
I think that's just it. She's just not on the same level.
I guess that's it.
Although I did like that when she was outside, when she was on the apron, she did
she snapped her head on the top rope there. Yeah, but that was about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Solid. Looking forward to more from both of these women.
Sonya looked great. She looked like she had a 10.5 of personality and somebody really to hate. So enjoy that.
Enjoy the hate.
What, like, Sonya does a lot of little things well, which is, of course, is hugely important in professional wrestling. And her pre-match, like, shadow boxing looks so boss. And it's real easy to make that look dumb or to not do it well.
Right.
Well, if you give that to somebody who hasn't boxed, it might look a little bit weird.
Right.
Even people who have boxed, like, I mean,
what, like Bart Gunn?
Like someone who doesn't know what to do with their arms. But, like,
not there yet.
Like, for example, we were talking, like, in the main event, we'll talk about this more, but, you know, you're talking about, like, how, you know, when a guy is really, when two guys are really tagging each other there on the ring, it doesn't always necessarily look good. Because often, a potato looks horrible.
Right.
It, like, Shane McMahon's punches look terrible, but if you talk to anybody who's ever been in a match with Shane McMahon, they know that they get, like, black eyes and welts and stuff.
It's like hell.
Yeah.
That guy survives, like, helicopter crashes. He's a badass.
Yeah. Like, that's the least insane. Extreme thing he's ever done.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I know.
No, you ask Vince McMahon, he's the son of God.
Yeah.
So, there's that. Hideo Itami in the back, talking about how nobody, including Cassius, seems to be giving him any respect, so why should he give respect to anybody?
Yeah.
But, okay, we got to go back to the ring. No. Goes out to the ring himself, starts giving a little bit of a Japanese promo, talking about how he deserves respect, wants the audience to show him respect. Don't disrespect me. I don't care who's next. Aleister Black's music hit, and everybody just, what's going to happen? Aleister takes his time, comes out, does his full entrance. This man is in my ring. Hideo goes to leave. But as he comes back, we don't know what he's going to do. You brought it up.
Right. No, I saw it coming. Hideo may have been turning to apologize, and all of a sudden, Black Mass lights out. That's it. Hideo Itami is scraped off the mat with a large spatula.
So we were wondering who Aleister Black was going to be taking on at TakeOver. Does this match interest anybody?
This should be pretty fun.
I'll tell you what, it interests me a lot more than Itami versus Ono.
Yeah, I give you that. At least right now.
Just because, like, Aleister Black.
Man, Aleister Black
man,
is still
alive.
But he's on a serious role.
Yeah.
Serious role. Itami hasn't been winning too much.
But if there's somebody that he can get that redemption against, it's Aleister Black.
He would seek it. I don't think he would get it.
Also, like, how boss would that fight be? Like, those dudes kick so hard.
Kicking the crap out of each other.
Yeah. Man, but, Itami, though, I worry about him because he takes one of those kicks and his jaw might break at this point. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, he's just had such a string of bad luck and injuries over the last few years. Mm-hmm. Like, going up against a guy like Aleister Black, that could be a short match, and it could make and something embarrassing could happen. You know, that's the truth. You know, and that's something that he's got to overcome and think about walking into it. You know,
but the other guy he's feuding with right now is also a guy who's a striker and does a million strikes per match, and right. You know, so
I think Itami's got to be careful because I feel like he's just right now going to become setting himself up to be the middleman between Ono and Aleister Black, and he's becoming the stepping stone for one of them or both of them.
You think like Ono's going to come out next week and be like, I wanted to kick him.
Hey man, you got in my way, and we get a triple threat before he catches Ono and Itami.
We've talked about it a lot, but like Itami is like the very definition of snake bit, and it's such a bummer.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
like anytime he's gotten like the slightest bit of momentum, just something horrible. Right. Like Oni Lorcan busts his whole nose up a couple weeks ago. Like,
I mean, it was impressive because he came right back out.
He didn't want to stop. They stopped that match for him. He didn't want to. I mean, the man's a warrior.
Yeah, he is.
You love watching him because he eats punishment and he dishes it out. Mm-hmm. But he's got such a bad rep right now.
But he has it. But he like what he's missing though. I mean, I'm sure you guys have already talked about this before. Is he's missing that fire that got him to the stage? You know, to this final stage, and you know of NXT. And he had it in his ROH run. Mm-hmm. He had it in Pro Wrestling Noah and everywhere else as he's been. But he hasn't had that, like, real fire. And I don't know if it's because of the injuries or whatever it is.
He had fire, like, fire times a million when he came back and was going to start his feud with Austin Aries. Mm-hmm. And everyone was just so amped for it.
Right.
And then he got dropped on his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Accidents happen. Yeah, yeah.
Buh.
I mean, just last night, John Cena got dropped on his head.
Yeah. Yep. That was,
it could happen to anybody.
That's wrestling, baby.
Yeah. Yep. Speaking of it being wrestling, Aleister Black versus Kyle O'Reilly was our main event of the night. Holy crap, was this a fun match. This was awesome.
Yeah.
Arms and all.
Yeah, very good. Arms akimbo.
Arms akimbo.
Swinging everywhere.
Kyle, arms akimbo O'Reilly. They started with strike for strike, then they went hold for hold, and O'Reilly seemed to be a lot more advantageous in going for as many holds as possible, but Black seemed to be one step ahead in keeping them off of their like full intensity.
Mm-hmm.
It's an intelligence game when you're going to the ground. Striking is sometimes lightning will strike, but on the ground it's chess. You really got to play the game. And I think the best thing for Kyle O'Reilly is the fact that the last man Aleister Black faced was Bobby Fish. They're a pretty legendary tag team at this point. So I think Kyle was able to watch that match and go, all right, so how does Aleister actually do things? This is up against a guy that Kyle knows really well. So he's able to watch the tape, dissect it, and probably give Aleister Black the greatest match he's had thus far in NXT. I mean, he almost put him away. Mm-hmm. It was
greatest
damn
challenge
close.
For sure, right?
Yeah.
Like when they were standing in the beginning and we talked about it, but like you would think, okay, the announcers kept saying that, oh, Aleister Black is going to have the advantage on their feet, but to be honest, Kyle is shorter, you know, and he was playing the inside, and he was tagging Aleister more than Aleister was tagging him, mm-hmm. and he played it perfect. You either play it two ways. You play it on the outside when you're a little shorter than the other guy, and you don't have that reach. You play the outside and not get hit, or you play the inside, and while that guy's throwing bombs around you, you're just connecting on the inside, and you played that perfectly, and it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's much fun.
Yeah, by far the most competitive match Aleister Black has had, and I think it really speaks to the really wonderful character that Aleister Black has cultivated, where it's just like he was getting frustrated in the match, but he was never getting so frustrated as to lose control.
Right.
And I think Kyle O'Reilly may have hit that point at a few moments where he didn't know what to do to put this guy away, and so he sort of lost it a little bit.
Well, that's how he lost the match. He really did.
It took a split second. He got fired up, and he took that minute to get fired up, and he got hit with Black Mass, because Aleister Black doesn't need a minute to get fired up. Like, he has that internal, like, burning calm, and that's his
whole...
He
doesn't have fire. He is ice. Yeah, that man is ice through to the bone.
Yeah, but he doesn't need anything to he doesn't need any external stimulus to motivate him.
Yeah,
he just is a machine. He's a drive. He's an engine.
Yeah. He's just got it all unlocked.
Whoo boy. But the coming back from the last commercial, we were a little surprised that this was a main event. Not sad about it.
Just because it started so early in the episode.
Yeah,
right. It's like a half hour three left. Segments, right?
Yeah, it was. Three segments.
Mm-hmm. But the last segment, like the both of them getting back up to their feet and just striking each other with everything that they had back and forth.
That moonsault out of nowhere.
For distance. Oh, man. He hit that moonsault for distance.
And that is a huge ring. That ring is massive, you know? So that was insane. Yeah.
You know, looking at it, you're going, he's not going to make it! Yeah. And he lands it, like, holy crap!
Like, you know, like, on the video games, like, when you go to hit a moonsault and your opponent's, like, way on the other side, but, like, you can... because
it's just that weird,
like, that was that moonsault. That was, that's great. It was so good, yeah.
Moonsault straight out of 2K, available October 20th. Yeah.
But I really love when NXT or WWE does, like, an indie match. Basically, because they take all the best parts of a crazy indie match and they slow it down and they take out like maybe a third or half of the stuff that they would do in like PWG or somewhere. Like, New Japan is really good at this, at like distilling stuff down to like what is the story, what makes the most impact, while still being totally insane.
Right, right. They try to trim the fat a bit. You know?
Well, like, look at the 60-minute match between Omega and Okada. I mean, if you have an hour, you should look at that match.
It's insane.
But they do everything, but it fits so perfectly into the 60 minutes.
Right, and it... That match is so insane for me because I've seen a couple of 60-minute draws in my lifetime. I saw Joe versus Punk, all three of them. And a couple others, but they never like had a pace of like where they one guy was holding an arm bar or like you know like the Brett versus Shawn match, you know, and that became a thing. It was not that kind of paced match, but it was still paced where like there was so many ups and downs, especially in the last like 20 minutes. It's like one guy hits a move. Then they're both down because they're exhausted. Then there was like a little combo flurry of a couple moves. And then, you know, nobody could stand after that. It was so amazingly done.
Like Omega avoiding the Rainmaker just because he collapses?
Yeah.
just so narrowly avoiding it.
Yeah.
But it's also like it's just such a testament to that match and to the Joe Punk Broadway where it's like it's so difficult to put together a match where you're going to do a 60-minute time limit draw and not telegraph that that's what you're doing, like, by the 20-minute mark.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Where it's, like, 20 minutes in, like, the crowd can be like, all right. I see where this is going.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that brings up a question, but I want to finish the show so that we can get to a little bit more about Mr. Rock and Roll. It ended with Kyle hitting a really gross, they called it an axe kick, but it was just a to the back of the head and started going for the follow-up. Alistair hits the Black Mass for the win, and that's our show. Holy crap, what a match. I would like to see that again. But we're talking about building a match for New Japan, and can we talk about your time at the PC?
Yeah,
even though we just kind of did?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So can you speak at all to how WWE or the Performance Center is teaching people how to structure matches versus how a New Japan would structure?
Well, I think that, you know, probably what I think is going on at the PC is they're kind of structuring matches like in that just traditional, you know, WWE formula, you know, because, I mean, you have to start somewhere, right?
Sure.
And everybody's, you know, most of the guys there that are starting out, probably 75% of them, right? And there's like 20, 25% that come from the indies and already have experience. But the only thing about that is like they're only kind of learning that one formula, you know, and then obviously it takes experience to learn other formulas and other ways to do things. Where in New Japan, of course, there's a New Japan formula. There's always a formula, right? But, you know, you're working with a lot of different guys from all kinds of areas and who have a lot of ideas, you know? So, like, and what's cool about New Japan, too, is, like, when you first start out, they don't, like give you all the tools. Mm. Like, in NXT, they want to get you prepared for every single situation. And in New Japan, it's like, we're giving you five moves. Go out there, kid, and figure it out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So you're learning on the job, and you're really having to apply, you know, just a couple of tools, and you have to build this house with, like, you know, a hammer and a few nails. And, you know, maybe somebody will loan you a saw, you know, so like, that's basically what it is. So I think that, it's a bit more effective learning on the job, than trying to, you know, just give everybody so much information that it just, like, it kind of makes them a little crazy, and then, you know, like, they don't know what to focus on, you know?
It's like cramming for a test. Like, exactly. What information do I pull?
But that's really interesting because the WWE formula is so much simpler than the New Japan formula, but, like, they inundate them with all this information to prepare them for any eventuality, even though it's not going to be any eventuality.
Right. But I think that that's just the only small thing in the system that doesn't really work yet, or they just haven't quite figured out, you know, exactly what they need to do. But really, though, the guys just have to work. I think it's better to give them less and just say, okay, look, do this and this, and then go do it, you know, go make something out of nothing, you know, like, it's more interesting to learn how to bake a cake with, you know, from scratch than just buy the box and, you know, you have everything ready to go, you know?
So at what point does the New Japan Dojo tell the young boys, like, okay, now you can do this, now you can do that?
When you leave and you go on your excursion. So basically that's when you build your guy. You know what I'm saying? So you get the
few. And Tozawa did a really good job of building his guy.
Right. Tozawa is a guy, you know, that's the Japanese way. And obviously, like, a Dragon Gate, they're kind of like the in-between, I think, between WWE and probably the New Japan system, because, like, they kind of prepare you a little bit more because you're learning their styles up. You're a little bit, you know.
Well, yeah, that Toriumon thing, you would think, like, okay, they're going to get some more moves.
Right. But look how good that first group was and how, like, they influenced, you know, professional wrestling. And basically, they were only, like, 2 or 3 years in or 4 years in, you know, that, like, and they just influenced a whole generation. They influenced me when I saw, you know, SEMA for the first time. I was like, who the hell is this guy? Like, what are they doing? What are these moves that they've created, you know? And, that was just really, really interesting. But I think that's like, Tozawa did a great job with that. And to see what he's doing now is just insane. I think he's the best guy in 205, you know, by far, you know. Yeah.
Although I've really been impressed with Arya Daivari so far. He's, even since he's just been on, from the Cruiserweight Classic to now, his, like, look and his style has evolved so much. Like, that's one of the testaments. It's almost like he did his own excursion, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting concept.
This isn't a 205 after show, but I'm a big fan of Mustafa Ali.
Yeah, well, obviously.
How can you not be?
Yeah.
And let me guess, Drew Gulak.
Well, between...
That's just because it's Drew.
Gulak and Kendrick.
Yeah.
Like, between those two, you've got probably a couple of the most brilliant wrestling minds that have ever been created. And Brian Kendrick can use any part of a wrestling ring to disable an opponent. That's what makes him so dangerous.
Yeah.
It's not in the ring. It's the entire arena.
Yeah, I love the Cruiserweight Kendrick. He's turned it up in such a way that, you know, and then you kind of forgot, like, oh, yeah, Brian's that good. Duh. Yeah.
I forgot. So the internet and the wrestling community as a whole has been dealing with a terrible loss. And I can't believe you wore the hat, because you're just going to make everybody cry. I'm sure you've talked about it a lot, but Roppongi Vice, kind of no longer a thing.
Yeah.
So what is your next step? What do you want to accomplish now that you are not in this tag team?
Get Trent fired from New Jersey.
Yep.
That's Trenty Lock?
No, I think, definitely I'd like to do whatever I can to help Trent into his heavyweight excursion, you know? And obviously, you know, it's going to be a big change. The style is going to change for him in a huge way. And he's going to, you know, find himself in probably some big opportunities down the road, you know? So I'd like to help them. That's like a personal thing. But, you know, I don't think that, like, on screen I'll really be involved with them too much, besides, you know, we're part of the same faction. So we might be teaming as a group every once in a while. Me personally, my personal goals,
get that junior heavyweight title again?
I would like that.
I wouldn't mind seeing a series between you and Kushida.
Me and Kushida have great chemistry. Like, we tear the house down. We did a Best of Super Junior match last year, and I beat him, by the way, and I didn't get a title shot. But we tore the house down in it wasn't a Tokyo or like in Osaka. It was like Nagoya or something. It's a really great crowd. And we just like literally tore the house down. And we had like all the fans on their feet going nuts, and it was a good moment for me because I was like, see, I can still do these singles runs, you know. So I think that I talked about it before. Like, I feel like I don't want to like just jump into it. I kind of want to prepare myself. Like, I need to make some changes and kind of get into a groove of being a singles wrestler again because I haven't done it in so long, and like really focused on an actual like singles run. So like, you know, I want to change my look. I want to adjust my style a bit, you know, kind of like how Kendrick did, you know, in the cruiserweight division. Like he made some changes, you know, and I think that that's a necessary thing to do. But since I'm going to be on the road as well, it's not going to all be like quick. Like I don't want to just be like, okay, I'm a singles wrestler now, guys. And then have a really shitty run, you know, like I'd like to build up to it a bit. And I think that New Japan is like the place where like, you could be like a Homa did, where like you have a slow burn into a singles run or like an Ishii or something like that. Like I would like to be one of those guys, you know?
How about some more training? You had a seminar last night at Santino Brothers. How many people did you draw? It looked like the entire house was full, overpacked.
Yeah, if you know Santino's, it's like a tiny space. But yeah, we had like
sweat box.
Yeah, we had like 30 wrestlers in there.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was. We had a great time. I have a good time like teaching seminars and doing stuff like that. I'm not ready to really be a full time coach. You know, that's a big responsibility, and especially if I'm trying to plan a singles run or do something else, like I don't think it would be fair to the students to not give them my full attention. So I would be interested somewhere down the road. That's part of the reason that, you know, like you said, I didn't take that job at the PC because that would be a difficult thing because I still want to wrestle.
They wanted to Sarah Del Rey you.
Yeah, and I mean, and
but that's a huge compliment.
That's a huge compliment because, you know, basically Sarah's the spine of this change, this women's revolution. I mean, really in WWE, you know, but I you know, maybe I could have done that for the cruiserweight division, but I mean, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. There's time for that.
Have you ever thought? And like you said, there's still time for that. So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself or ahead of you. But like, have you ever thought about like what your legacy is going to be? Because like you were talking about Shima a little while ago, and like Shima is one of those guys like Christopher Daniels where like when you start getting into independent wrestling, they're everyone's favorite wrestler,
right?
Like at one point Christopher Daniels was everybody's favorite wrestler.
He was mine
at one point. Shima was everybody's favorite wrestler if they saw Shima.
Yeah,
but like I think you've been so good for so long, and Hobo and I talk about this a lot, like you've always been there like just kicking ass. But it seems like you're only just now starting to get like the respect that, or the accolades that people are like, Rocky Romero, that's the dude.
Right, right. You know, I try not to think about that kind of stuff too much. You know, I like, cause that, I don't know, it's like, it just messes with your mind, I think, a little bit. Like, what you know, then like, I have certain goals, like, not just wrestling, you know, are my goals. Like I have certain goals outside of wrestling that, you know, I'm trying to accomplish. Like I wanted to do an album. I did a couple, you know, and like, I want to do, like, I'm working on this project with another guy, Mark Warzeka.
He's on the Raw after show.
He's on the Raw after show. And we're working on this, like mockumentary that we put together. And, so like, I try to like find like, hey, I'm like 80% in wrestling, but I kind of want to be like Jericho in the end, like where like you can come in, have a great run for a year or two, then take like, you know, 8 months off and then go play a little bit, recharge, and then come back. Because I've been doing this for so long, like, you know, and I want to stay fresh.
Yeah.
And the only way to stay fresh is to go live.
You have to refresh.
Yeah.
Are you going to start doing like live shows?
Nah, probably not.
So. Well, you were talking about your music. Recently, we had a friend of yours, the Ashoka, on the show. And so you're a part of his project, the Ashoka Hustle.
Yes.
And there's also the music video that is just bizarre. But How is it?
I can't believe that it came out before Twin Peaks: The Return. Like, it's a bit like it. In some ways, it telegraphed.
Right.
That's why.
Never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
What was it like collaborating with Ashoka?
Great. You know who actually introduced us was Brian Kendrick.
Really?
Yeah, he actually introduced us, and he said, "Oh, you know, I got a friend. His name is Ashoka. He's a rapper, and me and Brian actually." On a couple of New Japan tours, have gotten really drunk and made like some crazy rap music in my hotel room.
I've heard some of that.
Yeah,
You gotta get those bootlegs.
Yeah. Maybe one day, maybe not right now. But
it's one of those things you like hip hop.
You just put a sticker on it that says featuring Brian, and then you can join Toru Yano and sell him the CD on the way to the ring.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe I should have Yano produce the whole thing, and then it'd actually really sell. You know,
nothing is ever not improved by adding Toru Yano.
Of course. That man is a serious genius. Like,
yes.
I feel like he's like underrated in a way. Like, he needs to be like everywhere all the time. But Yano's great. I don't know what we were talking about. I forgot.
Ashoka.
Yeah. So yeah, it was cool collaborating with him because, you know, we've been working on his album for, it seemed like forever, for like almost probably 2 years, I think. So I produced a couple songs on there. I did some writing. I did a couple like verses. You know, the verses weren't my strong suit because I think I had recorded those before the stuff that I did personally. So like, and that was really where the growth came for me as a performer, because I never really was interested in becoming a rapper. Like, I still don't say, oh, I'm a rapper or anything like that. I feel like I like to produce music. And I just, you know, I feel like I'm more like Puffy. Like, I just like to put myself on there, you know?
Yeah. What do you use to make, like, your beats?
FL Studio.
FL Studio?
Yeah, yeah.
Fruity Loops?
Fruity Loops, yeah. And you've also been...
We all know.
Yeah.
That's great.
Also, you've also been a lot more influential in your own merch, as you are rocking presently.
Yes.
Shout out to our iTunes listeners. But where did the decision come, and what sort of stuff do you have like high concept for that you just can't, that you're still trying to figure out?
I'm new to the merch game, like on this level of like really trying to go after it, like more than
did you ever market eye patches?
I am. No, we're doing. We're doing the eye patches now. Currently, we're actually just sold out, so we have to restock. So,
next step is the replica fur coat. Like, you can buy Finn Balor's jacket.
Why are you reading my mind? This is supposed to be surprises. You know, I want to be like Supreme and just drop stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, so, that's where the money is,
right,
dude.
Right. So yeah, I mean, yeah, these are all ideas that we're already working on, my girlfriend's just done an amazing job with the site and putting it together, and she's great at customer service, and like so far it's been really smooth, and I'm just like nothing but happy and grateful that all kinds of fans have really come out and supported the site, and it's been like, it's blown my mind, and it's more than I could ever imagine, and so now I'm like really excited and like gung-ho for it. Like, I want to, like, the Bucks have done such a good job with that, and they put out like really cool quality merchandise. So I want to take what they've done and just kind of improve it and throw my own spin on it.
That's why I was reading your mind, because about a month ago on Xbox show, the Bucks were guests, and I asked them, was there ever a merch idea that was so out there that you guys didn't do it?
Right.
And they said, pretty much no. But they said the one thing they balked on was because they have that deal with that company that's doing replicas of their tights for women.
Oh, yeah.
And the one with their faces all over it.
Right.
And they felt like a little uncomfortable before, but the demand's really high. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I asked them. I was like, was there anything too obnoxious for the Young Bucks to make merch out of?
Nothing is too obnoxious. Yeah. They're the Young Bucks. Yeah. You know? So I think, yeah. But I'm working on some jacket stuff, and like this thing just kind of keeps growing. Like the response for like even like these kind of t-shirts, the Black Soul t-shirts, like now it's like, oh, should we keep continuing with the, you know, do a line of just like Black Soul kind of Black Tiger, you know, kind of stuff, and kind of keeping that separate. I mean, these are all like ideas, and like right now we're just playing and having a lot of fun, and so I hope that everybody will continue to support RockyRomeroMerch.com.
And there's a Twitter account just for your merch, too.
Yeah, there's a Twitter account. It's Rocky_Merch, I believe. Yeah. So.
Well, Rocky, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the NXT After Show. Aside from the merch, where can folks find you on social media? What's any other things that you're on coming up or anything else you want to promote?
Twitter and IG, you can find me at AzucaRock, AzucaRROC. And probably keep an eye out for me at the G1 finals. I'm going to be doing something. I don't know what, but I'm should be Ryan. Announcing it soon. Yeah.
Just going to ruin the finals.
Just ruin the whole thing. Yeah. Just take out Omega versus Okada or something. But like, continue to support New Japan Pro Wrestling. You can check it out. Yeah. NJPWworld.com. You can sign up with that. It's like 999 yen a month.
That's exactly how much it is.
Yeah, and it's even cheaper than the network. Yeah. So
the other network.
Yeah.
We never talk about it on this show. No.
We never talk about it ever. This has been fun. I think it's time to go. Bill, where can folks find you on Twitter?
You can find me everywhere at Sundown Motel. Join me on my jerky journey.
Just spiritual thing.
Check out my writing at uprocks.com and with spandex.com. I just went on tour with FC Barcelona and wrote about it, and it was an amazing experience, and I hope you enjoy that post. It was really crazy.
Wow.
Check out all my stuff over there, and you can find me in Brooklyn SummerSlam weekend, so if you see me, say hi.
Please do. Hubbo.
And we'll be somewhere next week.
We're getting there. I'll let him handle it. I'll do it. At your hobo on the Twitter, and I'm around stuff doing things. Yep. Well, I was in Vegas last weekend, and I wrestled for FSW. Wasn't advertised, so I'm literally anywhere at any time. Yeah.
You never know when he might pop up. He's
out of nowhere.
He might pop up at NXTLA next week. He won't. But we're all going to be going to NXTLA next week, so that means we're not going to be doing a show in order to cover more of NXT. So make sure you follow us all on Twitter. We're probably just going to do a double. We're just going to cover two episodes the 16th. So make sure to follow all of us if you want updates from NXTLA. We're also going to be having Drew McIntyre in studio doing X-Pac 1-2-3-60 next week. And we're also going to be getting a couple of interviews for that show at Backstage for NXT. Mm-hmm. And then make sure to watch all of our other wrestling programming. We've got Ringside Pop, which Rocky was just on this past week, as well as our Monday Night Raw show with Hobo just joining. I like hitting him. Tuesday Night SmackDown. Thursday Night we do Lucha Underground. We love doing wrestling shows for you, so make sure to support all of them. Find us on iTunes, comment, subscribe, and find me on Twitter, Mark B. Donica. Our store is nxteamnetsbrecher.com. That's it. We're done. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.